Welcome to Own It, Babe. I am so thrilled that you're here. My name is Srini Fry, and I am helping you make peace with food, heal your body image, find more purpose and meaning in your life, and liberate yourself from our weight-obsessed society. Each week, I will introduce you to an inspiring guest or experiences of my own on intuitive eating, positive body image, self-love, personal growth, and everything else you need to live your best life and throw your scale in the trash. Are you ready for this? Let's dive in. I have such an exciting guest for you today. I cannot wait to share this interview with you with my friend Alyssa Rumsey. Alyssa is a nationally recognized and award-winning registered dietitian nutritionist and the founder of Alyssa Rumsey Nutrition and Wellness. Alyssa specializes in intuitive eating, body acceptance, and disordered eating recovery. Her philosophy is rooted in the anti-diet and health at every size movement, as she believes true health comes from nurturing behaviors to enhance physical, mental, and emotional well-being. So as you can tell, we are totally on the same page when it comes to food and body image and health. And through her writing, speaking, and one-on-one client work, she helps people who are frustrated with dieting rediscover the joy of eating and cultivate a healthy relationship with food and their bodies. She's also a monthly contributor to U.S. News and World Report, and she has appeared in over 100 media outlets, including NBC Nightly News, CNN, CBS News, ABC News, Prevention, Health Magazine, Self, and Women's Health. So, needless to say, Alyssa is a wealth of information, and she has also a powerful story to share of her own experiences with eating disorders and negative body image and how she became the dietitian that she is today. And we're going to talk about so many things that I know will help you out if you're currently discovering intuitive eating, trying to heal your body image or your relationship to food and your body. We're also talking about a physical restriction versus mental restriction and the connection to binge eating, which is something that I know so many of you are wanting to learn more about or struggling with. So I'm really, really psyched that you get to listen to this from Alyssa's point of view. And I walked away from this chat with a lot of food for thought. So I know it will be the same for you. So I won't keep you waiting any longer. Let's dive into my chat with Alyssa. Hi, Alyssa. Thank you so much for coming on the Own It, Babe podcast. I'm so excited to chat with you today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, so awesome. And I mean, you have so much experience in the field of nutrition and dietetics and now health at every size and intuitive eating. So there's so much to chat about. But before we dive in, do you want to tell us a little bit about who Alyssa is and what you do?
Sure. So I live in New York City, number one, and I am a non-diet dietitian. So I practice from a weight neutral, health at every size perspective, and I work one-on-one with people and utilize intuitive eating to teach people how to really ditch the diet mentality and the diet behavior and heal their relationship to food.
I love that. And you live in New York. I know we met there when I was there in September. There's just so much food there. So I just found it to be amazing to be able to just enjoy all the variety that's out there instead of focusing on dieting. And I'm sure that a lot of your clients that are maybe in New York, struggle with food and maybe you help them transition into actually enjoying all the variety that it's there. So how's that been for you? Because you haven't always lived in New York, right?
Well, I've been here for 10 years. So New York is definitely home now. But oh, okay. I grew up in a tiny town in Connecticut. And so, yeah, definitely did not grow up a foodie. But since living in New York, I am a huge foodie. I love food. And yeah, as you saw, there's so much of that here and so many amazing restaurants and chefs and just, runs the gamut. Like every cuisine you could imagine is here. And yeah, you're right. I mean, a lot of the people I work with, even I work virtually with clients, so they're all over the country, but majority of them, I would say, would consider themselves foodies and really love food and are trying to not feel guilty every time they eat and be able to enjoy food and then move on and not like dwell on that. So I can certainly relate to them in that sense, because I really love food and love trying new places and new restaurants and things like that.
And just sort of, you know, having that fun relationship with food. And I know that you didn't always have that, just like myself. So we talked before we started recording and you told me a little bit about your history with food and, you know, with dieting and binge eating. So what was that like for you growing up? I know you played a lot of sports, so, you know, maybe that impacted at your relationship with food as well. I'm just so curious to hear your story.
Sure. So I've not always had a good relationship with food, not by any stretch of the imagination. So yeah, I mean, growing up, I would say growing up, my relationship with food was pretty normal as a kid. I was really active, played a lot of sports, honestly never thought about what I ate. Definitely was raised on kind of your normal like 80s, 90s kid foods, like chicken nuggets, mac and cheese, grilled cheese. Like I was a really picky eater. I remember this one night, like standoff. I was probably like 7 or 8 years old and my mom had put tomatoes on my plate and she was like, you have to take one bite before you get up from the table. And I literally sat there for like 4 hours and just refused to take a bite of a tomato. Like I was like a really stubborn kid and like a super picky eater. But again, like I was super active and so just like ate what I want. Like we didn't have limits or restrictions on food in my house. My mom kept a bunch of foods around. Again, as I mentioned, I grew up kind of in the middle of nowhere, so was mostly like eating at home. My mom cooked every night. We had dinner as a family. And then stuff started to shift when I was in high school. So I had basically played sports year round through the time I was about 15 or 16. And then my junior year of high school, I stopped playing basketball. And that, I think, was a really big turning point because basketball was, you know, a huge part of my life. And, when that happened, it was kind of I think both stopping the sport. And then also I hit puberty around that time too, when I was around 16 and it was a combination of those two things. And I started gaining some weight, which again, like at puberty, that is a completely normal part of what happens to a female's body, but I didn't know that. And so my reaction was like, oh my gosh, what is happening to me? And, around that time, my mom was doing Weight Watchers. And so, I think I must have, I don't remember exactly how it happened, but I'm sure I must have, you know, told her like, oh, like, I feel like I need to do something because I'm gaining this weight. And so she took me to Weight Watchers with her. And that's really when stuff started going downhill in terms of my relationship to food.
And I'm sure your mom was just trying to help, as all parents do. And I think it's just that idea that we have of Weight Watchers, which luckily is changing now. I think as more and more people are speaking up that Weight Watchers is pretty much just a very restrictive diet that causes a lot of eating disorders. Have you talked to your mom ever since? Is she still doing Weight Watchers? And, you know, what was that like for her? I'm just curious.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. So first, no, she is not still doing Weight Watchers. Has not done it in years. But you know, she too struggles with her relationship to food and her body. And, as I've gotten more into intuitive eating and health at every size, like she's like my number one supporter. And so she, she like follows along with everything that I do and, you know, has read the book Intuitive Eating and, you know, is super active in this Facebook group that I host. And, you know, and so she's been, you know, has faced too, like her issues with food and her body and things like that. And so, you know, I think we've, talked about how that harmed both of us. And, you know, she's definitely taken a lot of strides to work on that herself and completely like supports and understands all the work that I'm doing too now.
Oh, that's so amazing. And just going back to, you know, you then going to Weight Watchers with your mom and everything, how did that unfold in terms of your relationship to food?
So went to Weight Watchers, you know, it was sort of your typical, you get weighed in and, you know, you're weighed in weekly or however often it was we were going. And I started tracking. So I remember having, this is like pre-smartphones. So this is like a little like paper paper food journal where you track your points. And so I got like really into that. And so also around the same time, I was taking an AP bio class in high school. And then also was starting to work out at a gym. And so I had all these things kind of, you know, coming my way at once. And I got super interested in the biology class about digestion and like how food affects our body and, you know, got really interested in that. And it was kind of the combination of that plus the Weight Watchers plus, you know, working out at the gym and, you know, talking to a trainer who, you know, had some ideas about food himself. And I got really restrictive with my eating and, you know, it started out like Weight Watchers kind of was a starting point with points. And kind of made me feel like, you know, really like hyper aware of food and portion sizes and, you know, things like that. But then kind of like took it to another level and was, you know, kind of at the time we didn't know this word orthorexia, but it was certainly like, you know, telltale signs of orthorexia. Like I was in high school, you know, in high school, like no one's thinking about what they're eating. And so I felt kind of like holier than thou, like, oh, like I'm eating really healthy. Like I'm, you know, have this like small lunch with, you know, God, I like look back. I actually found this food diary that I had to do for that AP bio class. And I was like, oh my gosh, how did my teacher, I think her comment was something about like, wow, you eat really healthy. And I'm like, oh my God, that is so restrictive. I can't believe that's all I was eating. And I was still active. I was going to the gym. I played tennis, like all this stuff. So it kind of like coalesced and was definitely under, it started for weight loss, but then became this like health, like me being healthy under the standpoint of that. And sort of more from there. And then, you know, that's when I was a senior in high school and found out like, oh, there's actually this profession called, you know, dietitian. And so I went into this field, you know, from a restrictive place, which I think if you talk to a lot of dietitians, they have similar stories of getting interested in it from more of this like orthorexia or restrictive place.
Yeah. So many that I've talked to that are now non-diet dietitians. I think, you know, we go into a certain field because we're looking to heal ourselves and then we just sort of take a different road. This is definitely what I did. I went straight into the fitness world as, you know, personal trainer, and I did my nutrition certificate, and I just wanted to, you know, I told myself I want to help people get healthy and I want to, you know, stay healthy myself and all of these things. And it was all just based on restriction. So I can definitely totally relate. And just going back to your story one last time, I know we both talked about, you know, our experience with binge eating. And I just like to know your viewpoint on that, because I talk to so many people that message me and tell me that they've started binge eating and they don't know where it's coming from because, you know, they're not restricting anymore. So now they're just binge eating and they can't stop, even though they allow themselves to eat all the foods, and they're basically just in pure panic. So can you just give us our thoughts on that, on why this is still happening, even if people don't restrict anymore, and maybe what that was like for you as well?
Sure. So it's funny, I actually just did a Facebook Live today and talked about this similar issue. So I think a few different things can be at play, but I think the biggest thing, so the physical behavior part of like dieting or cutting out certain foods, that tends to be the like the quote unquote easiest thing for us to change when we're kind of going through this process of intuitive eating and working on our relationship with food. So, you know, but you can be not physically restricting, right? So you can be allowing yourself to eat all these foods, keeping more foods around, not dieting per se, but you can still, so even though you're allowed, like there's no physical restriction, there's oftentimes what I find still a lot of mental or emotional restriction or like psychological restriction. So what I mean by that is, you know, still feeling guilty, feeling ashamed of what you're eating, feeling like, oh, this is bad, I shouldn't be having this, a lot of judgmental thoughts. And that type of restriction, while it, you know, it can be conscious, it also a lot of times might be subconscious because you're just so used to feeling that way about these foods. So even though you're allowing yourself to eat them, then you feeling bad about that or feeling guilty, that is still a type of restriction that has the same outcome as if you were physically restricting, which is, you know, any kind of restriction causes our body to want to eat more. So it causes our body to feel, you know, deprivation, or feel at least that there's going to be deprivation at some point in the future. Kind of this idea of like, oh, well, I'll do better tomorrow. And, you know, again, it might not be physical. You might be actually eating these foods, but if it's still that emotional restriction is still there, that psychological restriction, then you're still going to have the same outcome, which for a lot of people is, you know, binging or, you know, eating until they're really uncomfortable and feeling like I can't stop.
Mm-hmm. And is that what had happened to you as well?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think for me, I definitely remember the physical restriction part. So I remember binging and eating a lot because I wasn't eating enough, like physically was restricting my food. So I wasn't eating enough calories, probably not enough carbohydrates. I was also super active. And so this continued kind of into college. And, you know, for me, it would be a lot like I wouldn't eat that much during the day, or I'd eat what I consider to be like regular size meals. But for how active I was and what I needed, it was not enough. And so then what ended up happening would be like later in the evening or at night, that's when I would eat a lot. And so I definitely remember like the physical restriction part. You know, recall too, like kind of after getting over that, but still having this, like, you know, again, like that added layer of being in this profession where you feel like there's like a microscope on you and you have to be this like healthy eater, and then feeling like bad that I wasn't, you know, eating healthy. And then those feelings causing me to then eventually overeat.
That is so interesting. And I love that you brought up that mental restriction. I think even more people struggle with that. You know, and I mean, there's a lot of people that think they're not physically restricting, but they are, just because their bodies actually do need more food than they think they do. But I think the mental restriction is such a cultural thing too. Like, we're always told that we shouldn't eat too much of it, or, you know, everything in moderation. So it's like, okay to eat a little bit of it, but not too much. And there's just so many messages surrounding us. And I'm sure it's even more so part of the dietetics world. So I would love to know if there was a turning point in your journey where, you know, you decided you don't want to be that traditional, you know, prescribing diets dietitian. You want to actually help people heal their relationship with food and find joy in it again.
Yeah. So, well, I kind of had, you know, two turning points. I mean, personally, for me, kind of getting over the dieting and the diet mentality, that was certainly like a multi-year process. And it wasn't anything where I went into like consciously thinking like, okay, I need to improve this. It sort of happened over time, and it was after I moved to New York. And I think, you know, being around, like, my eating and weight would still kind of yo-yo, but being around people who had pretty normal relationships with food. And, you know, I worked in a hospital with a lot of other dietitians, but actually, you know, all my dietitian friends have like a very good relationship with food and loved food. And so it was kind of being around that and really just my life becoming more than just nutrition when I moved to New York. And so it kind of like slowly over time started to get a little better. And then the one main thing I remember was I was living with a few roommates, and one of my roommates, her boyfriend, lived in New Jersey. And so he used to come for the weekends, and he loved like sweets and desserts, and he knew we did too. And he was a super sweet guy. And so he'd show up and bring like all of us like ice cream and candy and like all the stuff, like all our favorite stuff, right? And so at the time, like, that used to cause me to panic. So I'm like, no, like, I can't have that in the house. Like, for me, it's always been chocolate. I was like, no, if chocolate's in the house, like, I'm gonna eat it. And yeah, at first that's what happened. Like, I ate a lot of it, and I ate, you know, would overeat it and binge on it. But eventually, because he would do that every weekend, eventually, and then he would leave, and then all the food was still there. Eventually I just got used to it being around. And I remember that being a huge turning point for me. It was like opening the freezer one day to like get something for dinner and being like, oh my gosh, there's been this thing of chocolate ice cream in the freezer like all week, and I have not even thought about it. And I actually don't really want it right now. Like, that was a huge turning point for me. And then, I mean, professionally at the time, I was still working in a hospital, and I used to work in the intensive care unit. So I was, you know, most of the people I was working with were not eating by mouth. So it was a very different area of nutrition. And then about 4 years ago, I left that job to start my own business. And I've always considered myself, you know, kind of since that turning point, like a couple of years after college, like I've always considered myself a non-diet dietitian, like not subscribing to certain diets, like not cutting out food groups, eating, you know, all sorts of foods. I was definitely one of those like eat in moderation type of things. Like, you know, I considered myself non-diet and I was really interested in mindful eating and mindfulness. And so I practiced that for a couple of years, but was still like taking on clients who wanted to lose weight. I was still giving out meal plans. I was still like, you know, our goals would revolve around foods that they were going to, you know, eat or not eat or eat more of or eat less of. And, so I was still doing that. And then I decided to take, I was like, I kind of want to improve my counseling skills. Let me look to see if there's an online course I can take. And I stumbled across the intuitive eating, like Evelyn Tribbley, one of the authors, like runs this 6-week, teleseminar and on intuitive eating for health professionals. And I was like, oh yeah, intuitive eating. I think that's like mindful eating. Let me try this. And that it was like, you know, minute one of the first session. I mean, mind was just blown. I was like, oh my gosh, this is so like, this makes so much sense. Like, yes, I agree with all of this, but wow, this is totally different and much more of a mindset change than I expected. And then also like much more of a change in terms of like, you know, compared to how I was working at the time with my clients. So that kind of kicked it off. And then, you know, everybody, and I'm sure you can agree with this too, because I feel like everyone who's in this field says like, once you see like intuitive eating and like health at every size, like you can't unsee it. Yeah. You know, it's one of those things, like it would have been so much easier for me from like a business perspective to like run back and like continue doing my like weight loss work. But I just couldn't unsee it. And so I took a couple months off. I stopped taking on clients because I was sort of like, what am I doing? Like I've been a dietitian for eight or nine years at that point. And I just felt like so confused. I was like, what am I doing? And felt like I was starting all over again. But I took a couple months off, did the course, did more training, did supervisions and training with Evelyn, with a couple other dietitians in the field. And then like sort of like restarted like my marketing, redid like all my website content, social media, like all of that stuff. And really, you know, then went full blast into the intuitive eating and the haze
and weight inclusive amazing world. Yeah.
Thank you.
No, I totally remember coming across intuitive eating. I think for me, I stumbled across the Christy Harrison podcast. I think that was it for me. Yep. And that was way back. Like I was still very much in my eating disorder. When I came across it, I was just searching for health podcasts on iTunes and it came on and I'm like, oh, that name sounds funny. I'll listen to it. And it was like back in 2014. And I just remember my mind being blown. And even though I wasn't, you know, I didn't recover actually till 2 years after, I still couldn't unsee it. So I'm just so, so happy that more and more people speak up with, you know, not restricting to be healthy. You don't have to restrict food. You don't have to cut out carbs. You know, there's another way. There's another more liberating and peaceful way to do that. And on your website, you also talk a lot about mindful eating, which is somewhat related to it. And this is a very selfish question that I have, but I remember, you know, trying the whole mindful eating thing. That was before I recovered, really. I was like, I need to do something. I can't keep binge eating in secret. I need to just find another way. I need to be more mindful about what I eat. And I think because of my background with disordered eating and kind of that compulsive need to control every morsel of food I put in my body, I just took it way too far. And I just turned it into another diet, basically. So, you know, I would totally stress myself out over needing to stop exactly when I'm full on a scale of, you know, 1 to 10. I need to be at like a 6 or 7, and then I need to stop. And if I would eat past that, I would just beat myself up. And it was just so confusing to me. So what's your take on mindful eating in general and how to not turn it into another diet?
Great question. So, well, first I'll say, you know, because I was similar. I thought mindful and intuitive eating were sort of the same thing. And it wasn't until I started the training in intuitive eating that I realized that they are different. So the way I like to say it is that, you know, intuitive eating kind of encompasses mindful eating, but it goes a step further. So mindful eating simply is kind of like, it's the process of really paying attention to your eating experience. So paying attention to the taste, the texture, the smell of the food, like being in the moment when you're eating, and doing so, trying to do so without judgment. Intuitive eating, I kind of consider this umbrella over top of that, that includes mindful eating, but also, goes a step further and really addresses, the importance of rejecting the diet mentality, relying on your internal hunger and satiety cues, giving yourself unconditional permission to eat, and really using, you know, gentle movement and nutrition without judgment. So both of them, mindful and intuitive eating, are useful tools to help you heal your relationship with food. But I sort of consider intuitive eating this bigger umbrella and mindful eating a component of that.
Yeah. And I think it's just so much easier to view mindful eating as just being mindful, like you said, but not sort of turning it into a rule. Like, you always have to be mindful and you always have to stop exactly when you're, you know, kind of full, which actually brings me to my next question. When it comes to fullness, I was just doing some research on your website and I came across the article you wrote about the difference between fullness and satisfaction. And I loved it. So I would just love for you to talk about this a little bit and what you mean by knowing the difference between feeling full and feeling satisfied.
Sure, sure. So we tend to think of fullness as being this important thing, like, oh, you know, stop eating when I feel physically full. And so fullness, I always describe like, okay, physical fullness, how full your stomach feels. And that also has to do with some hormone regulation and some things that trigger, you know, fullness cues in your body. But satisfaction is kind of the second part where, you know, you can be physically full. The example I always use is, you know, you can sit down and eat a huge bowl of like steamed vegetables. Your stomach is probably going to feel physically full. Like, you're probably going to feel like, okay, my stomach's full, but most likely you're not going to feel satisfied. So, and satisfaction is really the signal that turns off our drive to eat. So, satisfaction is really kind of the, like the mental sensation of satiety, of fullness. So feeling like you've eaten food that you enjoyed, that you liked the taste of. Satisfying meals tend to, you know, taste good, but also include a variety of foods and include, you know, like protein, carbohydrate, and fat. Again, from like a hormone regulation perspective and the hunger suppressing hormones that your body releases, including carbohydrate, protein, and fat, all signal fullness and satiety in different ways. So, you know, you could be physically full, like you could eat, like I said, a whole bowl of vegetables, but chances are you're not going to be satisfied and you're going to continue to look for food to eat, even though theoretically like your stomach is full.
This reminds me of this whole hashtag volume eating on social media. So there's just, and I mean, I used to be that person too. So, you know, everyone probably gets there on their own time to understanding that this isn't the solution, but a lot of fitness influencers talk about volume eating and I find it to be very confusing for someone that is still vulnerable to these messages. And I mean, I did it and I told myself that I just need to, you know, put more spinach into my meal so I can actually fill myself up. So I'd have these huge bowls of salad and I would just put like a tiny little bit of fat on top, like some nuts and seeds, but I would just try and fill up on green vegetables. And so I can totally relate to what you said about the difference between fullness and satisfaction. I think it's so important to know that difference. And I think a lot of people are maybe now understanding the difference, but they still feel guilty if they eat the foods they truly want and that no will satisfy them. And I know for myself, like that guilt always took away the satisfaction factor for me. So what would you say is your number one tip for someone that is trying to get rid of food guilt?
Good question. So, well, yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head with like the problem with food guilt, because people are like, oh, well, if I, you know, this is like why the whole like shaming people to eat better doesn't work, because when you feel guilty, all it does, it like takes away that satisfaction. So you don't feel satisfied and then you continue to kind of look for other foods to satisfy you. So number one tip, and first of all, I always tell people like, it's an active process. Like you can't just be like, okay, food guilt, go away. Like it's an active process to turn the volume down on that voice in your head. And it's not going to happen overnight. Like it takes a while. It's an active process, but it is possible. Like it is possible to, you know, over time start to have that volume be turned down. And, you know, when those voices do pop up, be able to like push through them and be like, okay, no, like I know what that is. Like I don't need that type of thing. So the first step, so I usually tell people it's like two steps. Step one is recognizing that that's what it is. So like calling it out, be like, oh, like that's the diet mentality, or like that's the food police, like calling it out and noticing when those voices pop up. So like just being cognizant of them. And then the second step is to start to reframe those voices. So one thing is to, instead of making judgments, so probably like a judgment or guilt is the first thing that's going to pop up, taking that and instead trying to make an observation. So for example, instead of like, oh, I ate so much food at lunch, I can't believe how much I ate, like blah, 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 blah. Instead of thinking like, okay, you know, I skipped breakfast this morning because I was running late and I was really starving by noon. And I found it, you know, real, I ended up eating like a lot more food because I was so hungry. Or, you know, instead of like beating yourself up for having like a bunch of cookies at night, thinking, you know, I had those cookies last night, but I didn't really pay attention to how they tasted. So making these observations instead of judgments, and trying to stop, like remove the words, you know, should, must, bad, awful, trying to like notice those words, start to remove them and replace the thoughts and phrases, those like judgmental thoughts and phrases with more like reasonable and, you know, non-judgmental ones. So using words like may or can or is okay, like I can eat whenever I'm hungry, or it's okay to have dessert two nights in a row, or it's okay, you know, that I didn't have a vegetable today. You know, so starting to, you know, step one, notice those voices, label them as, you know, the judgmental voice or the food police. And then step two is to start to reframe those. And so I say it's an active process because you actually have to like really actively do it. I mean, a lot of my clients will, they'll write this down to themselves in a journal. Some say it out loud to themselves. Like they're like, no, like that is diet mentality. Like I'm allowed to have this. So, and the more and more that you reframe and come up with, more observations instead of judgments, the more second nature that becomes.
Oh, love that. So powerful. And I love using this too when I feel sick after eating something or something just doesn't sit very well, right? I used to just always beat myself up for that. And now it's like, oh, it's actually just some information that my body is sending to me and I can just observe that without judgment. So thank you for sharing that. This is so, so valuable. And Alyssa, you have so much experience in this field. I mean, you've won countless awards. You've appeared on over 100 media outlets. I mean, congrats. You're just a queen.
Thank you.
Amazing. So after all these years being in this industry, what would you say is the biggest struggle you see with your clients?
I mean, I think the biggest struggle is just the, you know, they can, you can do work on yourself, but then you go out into this world that is so centered around diet culture and, you know, like the thin ideal and, you know, all the media and social media and TV, like everything we see is so like thin centric. And so I think the biggest struggle is trying to figure out how to live in a world that tells you, and especially as women, that tells women that we're not good enough and that your body's not good enough, your looks aren't good enough, and trying to figure out how to live in that world and be able to like stay true to yourself and be able to have like build up the like the body resilience and body image resilience to be able to have those messages kind of, one of my friends uses the analogy of like being like a brick wall, like message hits the wall, but like cannot penetrate, you know, like bounces right off of you. So I think that, you know, ends up being the biggest struggle. Cause like, you know, we can do this like amazing work together, but then they have to go out and exist in this world that is still telling them that, you know, their body is not valuable. And, so really trying to continue to like build up that resilience and combat that, that diet culture that unfortunately is all around us.
Oh, that is so true. And I think this is one of the most important things that we do, as we talk and share our stories and as you help people along the way. So I just want to acknowledge you for doing the amazing work that you do. I just have a couple more questions for you before we head off. So my first question is, what has been the biggest lesson of your journey so far?
Oh boy. Good question. So there's so many. I feel like it's just a constant learning experience. But I think probably the biggest thing and the thing that I continue to learn more about is really recognizing and understanding the idea of thin privilege, and also, you know, like recognizing my own thin privilege. And, you know, I've done work on this myself in terms of recognizing my white privilege, but never thought about it from the perspective of being, you know, thin, young, able-bodied, and like the privileges that I have, from, you know, those things that I've been granted. And, you know, so like, I never have to worry about walking into a store and not finding clothes that fit, or fitting into a chair at a restaurant, or getting shamed for eating certain foods. You know, and so really like recognizing that. And then also, and this is still work that I'm doing, is figuring out how I can amplify my voice, or amplify others' voices that are marginalized. So like using the platform that I've built, and instead of just amplifying my own like thin, white, privileged, like able-bodied voice, amplify others' voices. And so that is still something I am working on, and I am reading all sorts of things right now and just trying to consume all of this content and kind of figure out for myself what that looks like. Because, you know, the more that, like, yeah, I speak from the experience of a thin white woman, you know, but there, and sure, I had issues with body image and with food, and lots of other thin white women do as well, but there's these marginalized voices that don't get as much of a platform to speak from. So trying to, how can I use my platform to help others that are historically marginalized? And so I think that's been kind of like a big part of this journey that I never, you know, didn't even think about beforehand. And I'm still, you know, learning so much about. I think too, recognizing and unlearning my own biases, you know, especially in respect to people in larger bodies. So I think those two things are, you know, some of the bigger struggles, and then also just, you know, things I continue to learn and grow from.
Oh, I'm so with you. I'm at the very beginning stages of this. And for me, for everyone, I think it's an uncomfortable topic to talk about. And it's so important to especially talk about it because it's uncomfortable and it makes other people uncomfortable. But it's just continuing to get comfortable being uncomfortable and bring up these topics and raise awareness. So thank you so much for bringing this up. This gives me a lot of food for thought. And my last question to you is, what is the first thing that comes to mind as for your favorite way to take care of yourself, favorite self-care?
Ooh, favorite self-care is sitting on my couch at night in front of the TV, probably in front of Sex and the City, because I can just watch those episodes. And no matter what is going on, I always feel better.
Plus you're
that.
In New York, so you're right there. Even better.
Yeah. So I would say like Sex and the City on my couch, like giving myself a night in. You know, New York is amazing, but there's also like always something going on, and I have to like really actively be like, no, I'm not going out tonight. Like my self-care is saying no and like setting those boundaries, which I have a really hard, that's like a whole nother conversation. I have like a really hard time with like setting those boundaries. But like I've learned, it's like, I need to take that time to recharge myself. So yeah, giving myself that time and then allowing myself to just like the mental break of, you know, not, I mean, I'm sure, you know, as an entrepreneur too, like too, there's always work that can be done. So kind of giving myself that space and be like, nope, like shutting off for the day, like, and doing something that just is like a treat to myself.
Mm, love that. Yes. So important to set those boundaries. So, okay. I'm sure everybody wants to go find you right after this episode because you're awesome. So where can people go and find you after this episode and connect with you?
Sure. So I'm on Instagram at Alyssa Rumsey RD. I also have a private Facebook group that people are welcome to join. That is facebook.com/groups/ditchthedietsupport. So that's an intuitive eating and body image support group. We have a really active, amazing group. And, you know, just a lot of people in the same boat going through the same things. And it's been really cool to see that community grow. So those, and then my website is alyssarumsey.com.
Awesome. And I will add all of this to the show notes. Thanks again so much, Alyssa. Cool.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Own It, Babe. I really, really hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, make sure you share a screenshot of this episode to your Instagram stories. And don't forget to tag me. I am at Own It, Babe. And I would love to come see you there and say hi. Or you can share this episode with someone you love or someone you think might benefit. And of course, if you feel inspired, leave a quick rating and review and tell other people why you love this show. I'm always so grateful for your support, and I can't wait to catch you in the next episode.